You are listening to the Live Free Experience. I'm your host, Brianna Bowley, trauma coach for high performers. I believe that understanding the nervous system and all its wisdom is the key to creating and experiencing all that we desire. And I believe that honest, anything goes conversation paves the way for us to begin a healing journey that has us continuously stepping into more of who we are. I've been blessed to work with, for, and alongside some of the best of the best in their chosen fields. And it's my pleasure to be the platform to share the wisdom and insights I've gained with each of you. Together, we'll explore trauma-informed performance and optimization, business, and self-expression. So in a world where everything touches everything, I encourage you to listen selfishly and with your own circumstance in mind. As I promise, if you found yourself here, there's a piece of wisdom wanting to land in your world. All right. So I'm super excited to have this conversation today. Now, truth be told, I'm going to dive myself in here. I don't know a whole bunch about today's guest's history. I first stumbled upon him when I saw a reel on social media, basically breaking down how to view goals and how to really strive towards your goals specific to jiu-jitsu. And my favorite thing about sports is that I'm a big believer that sports are kind of life condensed into a shorter period of time. And so I always love hearing about how people break down the mindset of sports and break down how to really strive towards, you know, a specific outcome in sports, because it's reflective of life. So for me, it was a no-brainer to get Christian Woodmincy on. Did I say that right?
That's perfect.
Yes, on the show. So for those of you who do follow jiu-jitsu closely, you've probably heard of him. He has a, I'm led to believe, a very impressive competitive career. So Christian, welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
My pleasure.
Super excited.
It's an early morning for Christian, so I'm very stoked to have him on. Yeah, so I guess best place to start, for those who, not all of my listeners are jiu-jitsu followers or fans, would you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. Jiu-jitsu-wise, I'm just a very small human jiu-jitsu practitioner. I'm currently a black belt. I'm about to get my second degree. I got my black belt from Andre Galval. I've been doing jiu-jitsu for almost 15 years. It'll be 15 years in March. I've been teaching jiu-jitsu since I was a blue belt. So it's been just about maybe like 15-ish years of teaching. I used to compete actively. I was a full-time competitor, which means I didn't do anything other than train full-time. I didn't have a job. I didn't, do anything other than just be on the mat for multiple hours a day. I trained under many different instructors before I found my home in San Diego, California. Trained with people like Robert Drysdale, Lloyd Irvin, Cyborg. And then, so I basically taught full-time for Andre at Atos HQ. And this was basically the beginning of Atos's, not the very beginning, but maybe a couple of years into Atos's powerhouse of being known as one of the top academies, if not the best academy in the world for competition jiu-jitsu. So now I own my own academy, run my own academy. I have an affiliation of 20 academies all over the world. And now I just teach and travel to teach seminars as well. But jiu-jitsu is my life. And that's all I've been doing for the past 15 years.
Beautiful. I love that. So there was something that you said there that I kind of want to bounce back to. So you said that, you know, you're a full-time jiu-jitsu competitor and you didn't have a job outside of jiu-jitsu. How did you make that work? Because, you know, I mean, anyone that knows jiu-jitsu knows that it's not a particularly high-paying sport. With my clients, I come across this a lot, kind of that constant grind, that constant struggle of trying to kind of balance living expenses with, yeah, trying to juggle it all. So how the hell did you make it work?
For me, basically, I just kind of dived into it. I made sure that I didn't really have any responsibilities. For me, in order for me to have the success that I did, or before I had it, jiu-jitsu had to be a lifestyle. Often a lot of people, majority of people, obviously a large percentage, are hobbyists that want to compete. And, you know, there's a couple of fine details in terms of sacrifice and commitment that, in my opinion, is needed to be made in order to really cross that line and to start getting into deep water. So I just aligned myself correctly with living way below means and having roommates. And, you know, it was easy because I wasn't going out on nights. I didn't drink. I didn't really have fun. I just stayed disciplined. And I was like a dog for many, many years, just doing the same thing over and over again. So I knew that from the start, that if I wanted to do jiu-jitsu full-time as in compete, and especially this is obviously like starting over a decade ago. So jiu-jitsu was even harder to crack into than it is now because less people were doing it. Less people were having seminars, et cetera, et cetera. No one's going to have a blue belt or purple belt, right? So I knew that I needed to have the ability to invest in my future, and I knew teaching was that tool. So I spent a lot of time focusing on my communication, understanding jiu-jitsu, understanding how to deliver jiu-jitsu. And I basically just use a tool of teaching and my connections inside of that to establish sponsorships, to be able to have the ability to teach at the academy that I was training at full time. And that was enough for me to kind of continue things. I didn't really have the support of my father in terms of financially. So when I made that decision, I was really, really on my own. It helped because I didn't have any responsibilities. Again, I didn't have a wife. I didn't have children. I didn't have a house. I didn't have to make payments on anything. I didn't have a car, right? So it was easier to live on less because I had less. All I had to do was basically have a place to put my head down, make sure I was eating two incredibly well meals a day, and then make sure I had a washer and dryer. The rest was going to be easy. From there, yeah, it was just doing that over and over and over again and making sure that I was winning, because if I wasn't winning, I wasn't really going to get paid or be able to grow. So for me to be able to align myself to do that, I had to make sure that I had nothing, so this way I could grow and have whatever I wanted.
Mm. Yeah, what I'm hearing is that real like discernment piece, like when you're so committed to the end goal, or, you know, to the journey, really, it's like, yeah, that willingness to just be discerning in like what's actually important, what's actually valuable, what's actually going to fuel where I'm looking to go, and what's distraction.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, that's exactly the case. I really like your point of view and perspective on like how you define that. I mean, there were literally days where I didn't win. So I didn't get performance bonuses. I didn't have the money to, you know, eat for certain days because I had to ration out like how I was going to spend my money, you know? So I had a very particular life leading up to this jiu-jitsu journey that I was on. So it wasn't too hard for me to sacrifice because I was already used to struggle. I was already used to saying like, hey, we already have nothing. You know, there may be a day where you don't have food, and that's not an excuse to not do something. It's an excuse to go out there and take what you need, right? So I don't really grasp or understand or support trying to do it any other way, because I've seen many people attempt to do it. It's a strong indicator that they're not understanding the sacrifice that it takes to really be great at something or to be exceptional at something. So for me, those things kind of made it a daily reminder that I had to be exceptional and make sacrifices if I wanted the reward or an opportunity for the reward. So it was well worth it. I would do it again. It was not fun. It definitely was a struggle.
Mm-hmm. So now that jiu-jitsu is kind of becoming more of a, I wouldn't use the term mainstream, but, you know, like it's becoming much more of a general population sport. I mean, I saw a photo, I think it's going around on social media at the moment, of like ADCC in like 1998 versus this year's ADCC, and like the difference in the crowd and the venue, and, you know, like it's clear how quickly the sport has grown. So with the sport now being a little bit, you know, more popular, would you do anything differently? Like if you were to have your time again, you know, if you were still climbing the ranks at this point, would you do anything differently?
I think that with the path that I took, the time frame, I wouldn't say I got lucky, but aligned very well. I think that if I were to not have started doing that circa, you know, 2008, and I were to, you know, try and do it today, like from step one, I think that there's way more access to information, and I probably would have gone further faster, but it's definitely way more challenging today to have success than it was then, you know? So for me, I think winning a world title now is harder than it was then. I think that, you know, it's definitely easier to get financial support, but because of that, it's harder to get it because it's so much more accessible. So you're talking about understanding the shift in value. So although there are many companies out there now that are in jiu-jitsu, perhaps they're making money, they also have their pick because now there's so many people, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think conceptually, I would do it the same exact way. You know, I would basically I would put myself into a corner and I would say, hey, you're either gonna sink or you're gonna swim, and this is how you have to do it. In terms of that idea, I would do it the same exact way, fully submerge myself in something. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think that there's different ways about it now. It's not unethical in today's world for a competitor, perhaps, that has won something at the rank of blue belt or purple belt to be given the opportunity and have the support of going and teaching a seminar somewhere. So that's definitely viable in today's world. Mm-hmm. For me, when I was reaching out to people as a brown belt that already won worlds and Pan Ams and Europeans, they were like, well, brown belts don't really teach seminars, but like, yeah, well, you know, we'll be open-minded. We've heard a lot about your ability to teach. So I was kind of paving some way for myself there because nobody was doing certain things that I needed to do. But in today's world, you know, those things have already been done. So it's a little bit different. I think they're definitely comparable. The sport itself and everything that it touches has grown astronomically in that period of time. I definitely think there's a huge generation gap, but that's all I know. I'm kind of like an old dog, so I don't have any new ways of doing it, but I would do it the same exact way. I would just have to be way better because there's so many people out there that you would have to beat now in order to really, to get that recognition, to be able to get those titles. And not that, again, then it was incredibly hard. It was very challenging for me, but I think if I were to retry and do it today, I would have had different success because there's just the depth of the pool is just way deeper.
Mm, yes, very true. I love that answer. So share with us, you're open to it. What got you started in jiu-jitsu? I'm always curious to hear like what led someone to get on the mats for the first time.
Yeah, I was very competitive. Well, I am very competitive in nature. I've always been that way. I actually was playing like paintball, the sport, and not like in the woods, but like the like a speedball version. I was playing very competitively for many years leading up to doing jiu-jitsu. And I was at an age where I was ready to make some change and adjustments because since I was growing and maturing, I think my goals were starting to do that. So I had to grow up. I had to start thinking about my future. I didn't feel the pressure, but my father was giving me the pressure of understanding about going to college and following the path and whatnot. So my brother, who's younger than me, but he's the second oldest in our family, was training Muay Thai, and his academy was starting a jiu-jitsu program, very small jiu-jitsu program, but it was something that he thought would interest me. And at first it wasn't something that I was considering. I had never grappled before. I never wrestled before. I heard, you know, obviously of UFC, but it was at a very small scale. So it wasn't like it interested me and I wanted to do it. So I didn't really know about jiu-jitsu until it was presented to me. And when I heard that, we talked about it. I went and gave it a try. And since that day, my first class, I immediately made the decision to start training full-time. I literally in that time frame never took off. I didn't train as a hobbyist first and then made the decision. I would train every single class for jiu-jitsu that the academy offered. So I truly felt the energy that it gave me. I liked the challenge that it gave me. I enjoyed who I was as a person in terms of how it made me feel when I was on the mat and the thought process that I had for growing while doing it. So it was something that I had no idea existed until it did. And then once I did it, life didn't make sense if I didn't do it anymore.
Oh, I love that. So it was instant for you. You knew it was your thing.
Instantly. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember your first class?
Yeah, there was literally six people there. My brother was there. A friend of ours that we went to high school with was doing Muay Thai. He also took that class. And then there was just basically two incredibly large men that were around. I don't do kilos very well. They're probably around 95 kilos. Like over 200 pounds. And at that time I was maybe 57, 56 kilos.
Oh, wow.
And I remember training with everybody, not knowing absolutely at all any jiu-jitsu, but neither did they. The only person that knew jiu-jitsu at that time, obviously, was the instructor. Physically, it was not enjoyable. I was very frustrated. And that's kind of why I was really motivated. And I was like, well, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel hopeless or helpless. I don't want to feel like another person can dictate what I can do in life. So I need to know how to stop people from doing that physically. So then they obviously were not in my way in any shape, way, or form. But yeah, I remember absolutely having no idea. So I try to remember these days when I have a white belt show up for the first time in my class, but it wasn't like brutal to the point to where people were dying and clothes were being ripped and people were bleeding, but it was a stereotypical, hey, there's a bunch of guys in the room. Nobody has experience. Let's try to learn some jiu-jitsu. And it was very impacting to me for sure.
Yeah, beautiful. So how have your goals shifted and changed from the white belt getting on the mat for the first time to competing to then, you know, I guess, evolving past your competitive career and then, you know, getting into teaching? Like, what's kept you going?
To be blunt with you, the goals never changed. Mm-hmm. I had some very, very clear goals that jiu-jitsu was part of the journey. So I knew from day one that my goal was to be able to have a career that was exceptional, that I was able to grow with and create multiple like avenues of revenue. Mm-hmm. And I needed a ship to kind of go on that journey. And jiu-jitsu was that journey. And then after I got on that ship and I was on that journey, I then had miniature goals that I believed I could use as progress points to be able to hit that level. So I said I needed to be able to teach. So I invested into teaching. I needed to be able to compete. So I had to win. And I did those miniature things to be able to check as many boxes as possible, because I knew the end game was going to be having an academy, teaching at someone's academy, whatever it may be. A lot of the goals became more clear or more efficient as I was going through the journey. Now that I'm at the end of the journey, but I don't compete anymore in that aspect. And I'm still acquiring those goals that I have. So now, instead of, you know, being a poor white belt who hadn't won anything or only had, you know, one gi, now I'm just a black belt with all the things that I needed to acquire to be able to keep doing what I'm doing. So now I have the lifestyle that I yearn for, and I have the ability to take care of my family and et cetera, et cetera. So the goals in the end, again, didn't change. They just, you know, they were refined. And then when I hit the goals and I met those goals, I just constantly kept pushing them right out of arm's reach. So I'd have to grow to get to the next step. And now I've been doing that for, you know, like 5-6 years. So I didn't break through and have the lifestyle of being able to take care of my family until, you know, roughly, you know, 6-7 years ago. So since that point, I've just been now pushing the limits constantly in my comfort zone outside of my reach, so I could keep growing and make more money, establish more connections, create more revenue streams, and be able to offer that information to be able to help out other people that want to do the same thing.
Mm. I love that, you know, from the beginning, your goal was something bigger than like just jiu-jitsu. Like, there was an overarching kind of lifestyle-based goal. What I find with a lot of people, you know, a lot of the clients and that I work with, is that, you know, the ones who are really successful in what they're striving for is that the goal is something so much bigger than just kind of like the obvious thing, you know, like rather than it being, oh, I want to eventually get my black belt, or I want to be a world champion, or whatever the goal may be. And obviously those are, you know, potential milestones along the way, but the overarching goal is, you know, like in your case, it was that you wanted to actually be able to create a financially viable lifestyle. You know, it's like a higher purpose, so that through all of the challenges along the way, and as you tick off those minor goals, like getting the blue belt and then the purple belt and so on, you know, it keeps you going.
Definitely. The ability to, for me, structure how to make a goal, to structure and have the clarity of your path, for me, it allows me to then act, you know, more efficiently and to be able to adjust accordingly. And it's something that I believe most people don't naturally do. And then obviously when they're aware of knowing how to do it better, then they make those adjustments and they see, like, you know, instant gratification and the results are a lot different. But I learn every day, and it's revalidated. You have someone who's not experiencing something and they say, oh, well, this is what I want to do. And it's like, okay, is that really what you want? Is there something of more clarity that you can simplify? Because, you know, if I were at day one of doing jiu-jitsu, say, you know, I want to be a black belt world champion, I'm going to go through, you know, a decade of failures until I even have the opportunity to then attempt to be a black belt world champion. And for most people, I think that would break your mind, or that would probably hurt your heart, or it would be very challenging to focus. And, you know, it's a great goal to have. It's very, very clear. But if you can't establish and really, really understand, well, what are some pinpoints along the way, it's going to be hard to be confident. It's going to be hard to be able to adjust yourself. It's going to be hard to understand when you're wasting time, when you're doing things correctly. And I think that clarity is very important. And for me, I would say naturally, I always kind of had clarity. I remember being 13 years old and saying, one day I'm going to be a father, you know, like that's just what I needed to do. It's what I want. So I was very clear with what what goals were way out ahead of time. And then because I had those goals, that kind of clarity and that kind of desire, it was way easier for me to say, okay, well, here are five pinpoints before I get there that can really make sure that I'm staying in a straight line. These pinpoints are going to make sure that I'm putting the four dots and I can go from where I am now to where I need to be. And because I did that, I think I had way more success along the way.
I love that. So I'm really curious. So for me, you know, as I said at the very beginning, what I love about jiu-jitsu is that it's very representative of life. And I definitely find that a lot of the things that I learn on the mat are relevant to all other facets of life, you know, life as a whole and vice versa. Do you ever kind of find that you'll have an experience drilling or rolling and I guess you kind of gain a learning from whatever experience on the mats that you can take and kind of make relevant to other facets of life? Do you feel that there's an overlap?
100%. For me though, I'm not religious, but jiu-jitsu is my Bible. So when I'm going through life on the mat, especially, but off the mat, all of my reference points are collected from the data that I have from jiu-jitsu. So when I go to Whole Foods and, you know, I see someone having an issue or I have an issue, whatever it may be, my natural thought process of problem solving kicks in and I feel incredibly calm and patient because of the data of problem solving in jiu-jitsu. So for me, jiu-jitsu literally is my life. I have conversations with students about just like in jiu-jitsu, we're making a goal. What do you want to do at work? Well, I want to get a raise. Or, hey, you know, I need to ask this girl out. And it's it's simple. Let's just make a goal. Let's figure out how we can grow accordingly. And it kind of the previous stuff that we're talking about. So jiu-jitsu literally has taught me everything. Everything that I do in business has literally stemmed from its jiu-jitsu. So if I didn't have jiu-jitsu, I would be incredibly lost. There's nothing that I don't do on a daily basis. This conversation we're having now, the reason why we're having this conversation right now, what I do, how I problem solve when I play a video game, what I'm trying to do in every shape, way, or form is premeditated from the data that I've collected in jiu-jitsu. Now, I think it's just because that I chose for jiu-jitsu to kind of be my life. So it's my reference point, but whether it's education in some shape, way, or form, a book that you read and we're referencing it for, you know, data or school or whatever else it may be, for me, that's my manual. And that's what I always refer to. And that's what I always fall back onto in terms of my comfort zone, because that data that I've spent collecting it, the struggles that I experienced, how to adjust, that's basically all that life is. So it's very conceptual and it's easy to connect to any topic for me.
I love that you always refer to data collection. I was watching just before we jumped on this call, I was watching some of your videos and forgive me, I'm going to completely butcher how you expressed it. But in a nutshell, you know, you were saying that jiu-jitsu is about, you know, being patient and just, you know, collecting information and, you know, you don't show up on your first day as a white belt and expect to have mastered it, because if you did, there's not really any point in you being there, right? And so it's over time progressively just collecting data and having that patience and, you know, not having that sense of urgency. And I find that that's honestly, I think it's one of the most important things to remember, whether specific to jiu-jitsu or any other goal for that matter. So I really love that that's something you consistently touch on.
Yeah, thank you. For me, I'm constantly in a state of, because of my job, leading my own academy, having students and teaching, instructing a lot of people and our connection, they're looking for gratification. Some of them are, it's instantly, so, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then we're using the tool of communication to be able to establish how that would even be possible and what would need to be done action-wise. Some of them are more long-term, some of them, but for me, it's really, really challenging for people to grasp, and especially in jiu-jitsu, that what they're looking to do is something exceptional and their idea of how to doing it is very exemplary, and there's no way it's going to work out, you know? And I think that when you tell people that, or you just say there's many ways of delivering it, but when you tell people that, it's a little bit easier to understand why something is exceptional and hey, so your work ethic needs to be exceptional to hit that, whatever it may be. But for me, it's just about persistence. So that's why I really tell people hey, I don't care if you train three times a day or three times a week, be prepared when you show up. When you show up, have that clarity. If you need help, that's what my job is. I'm here to help you to achieve that clarity. But when you're here, make sure that you're doing what you set out to. And with that, you then have the opportunity of accomplishing what you're looking to, and the time frame of how to do it and what you're looking to do and how far you can reach is going to be 100% then very clear. But now it's your responsibility. And because of that, now you truly have the ability to unlock it, you know. And a lot of people, I think, aren't accustomed to certain levels of communication or understanding how to really digest something. So by using that term data collection, or, hey, like, you know, this is how it should be, it gives people a little bit more, I guess, more relief. Like, hey, like this expectation. Cause I get people all the time like, man, I suck at jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, well, yeah, you do. I mean, you're supposed to, like, you know, if you could go up and be good at jiu-jitsu in a short period of time, would you want to continue to do it? I've been doing this for 15 years. If you were better than me in 6 weeks, would you want to pay me to teach you jiu-jitsu? Like, the gap here should be huge. You should suck. It should take you time. The only people that you're going to be better than are people that start after you started. And that's going to take time for you to really grow. And if you want to be better than the person that's been training twice as long as you, you're going to have to put in the work. And that's a great goal. And I'm here to help you do that. But don't sit here and, you know, lie to yourself and then try to get me on board that you think that you can wake up tomorrow and be better than someone that's been putting in that work with clarity for many years. It's just not going to happen. And if you want to prove me wrong, I would love to see it, you know, go for it. Let me follow your lead and show me. But when you get frustrated and then you're not having that success, just make sure that you're open-minded to how I lead and how we're going to do this. And for me, the power of data collection is absolutely fundamental. It's huge. And it creates the clarity in that specific concept really, really allows people to navigate their journey.
Yeah, I love that. One of my training partners yesterday actually shared a really, really powerful quote with me. And it was obviously specific to jiu-jitsu, but it's relevant to, you know, all facets of life. And it was, we're all striving for an imperfect goal, you know. And like for me, I think back to my very first jiu-jitsu class, and I remember putting so much pressure on myself at the time to get it right, you know. And I laugh now because I'm like, well, like, there is no right. It's just a constant learning, you know, process. And it's constantly course correcting and failing in order to get the feedback, and then course correcting, and then getting more data and failing and feedback. And, you know, it's just an ongoing process. And so all too often I see people kind of get caught up in this concept that there's a point where they're there, they've arrived. But, you know, as the quote says, like, we're striving for an imperfect goal. There is no there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Jiu-jitsu is a very powerful tool. It's nice that we both share jiu-jitsu so that it's easy for us to kind of connect with the understanding that you felt it, I felt it, you've witnessed other people feel it, you've had people talk to you about it. I'm around it in the same essence as that as well. And, you know, there aren't many people that show up on the jiu-jitsu mat that are comfortable with being in that type of environment naturally, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very high accountability, constant reminder of where you're at in life. You know, at my personal academy, we have jiu-jitsu, we do gi and no-gi, we have Muay Thai as well. And there is a huge gap in terms of, I wouldn't say characteristic, but like the type of people that only do Muay Thai at my academy, only train jiu-jitsu. And when I see those people cross paths, it's always the same thing, right? The less accountability that something has, usually the more people that do it. There's this retention there because, you know, they're not constantly reminded of something. The problem with that is that when you start to be exceptional, if that accountability isn't there, then usually that validation you're not getting, and you may, you know, it may be even more challenging. But jiu-jitsu day one is absolutely awful. People know right away, like, man, for me to do this, I've got to be a very particular individual. Truly, in my opinion, it's not for everybody. It's for a very particular type of person. It's for someone who understands exactly what you just said, which is like, imperfection. I'm going to strive for something that's not possible. I've got to keep going here. It's a never-ending journey, you know, like, and I like that quote. Another quote that I've heard is like, if improvement was possible, perfection is not real, right? So like, you're going to hit something. You're like, your arms are already out and you're just keep walking, you know? So jiu-jitsu has that kind of accountability that you're reminded every single day. You're a 30-year-old man training with a 14-year-old kid who's just beating you up and you're not grasping why, what's going on. There's, you know, you're like, man, I'm really bad at this. Yes, you are. You know, like, you know, in Muay Thai, the pad doesn't hit back. So when your technique is off, or, you know, if you're not doing it correctly, there's no repercussion or consequence, positive or negative, right? It would be like me going to the gym and not having a personal trainer and trying to, without any research, just lift up a weight, pick it up. And I go, man, this is great. I picked up weights today. I feel better, but like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. You know, there's no accountability there, you know? So in jiu-jitsu, that accountability is just always in your face. And some people, they enjoy that. Some people don't. And you kind of start to see that that's that particular characteristic that's attached to that accountability. If it's strong and it's there, you do jiu-jitsu. When it's not there, usually you don't do jiu-jitsu anymore, you know? And I think it's something that, again, is it's really, really uncomfortable for a majority of people because they've probably not experienced it at the level that they're going to, if at all. People show up all the time and they're just like, oh man, yeah, I suck. I'm going to do something else. And it's like, yeah, you do, but that's probably why you should do it.
Yeah. I rolled with a brand new white belt in, I think, her first or second week just the other day. And, you know, at the start of the roll, and I think this is so common, like I'm sure I said something similar on my first class, but, you know, she said, I have no idea what I'm doing. And it's like, of course you have no idea. It's your first week. It just always makes me laugh that, like, as human beings, we put this pressure on ourselves to have already mastered something. We've literally, you know, we've never been thrown in that ocean before. What I've witnessed is that what sets the people apart, you know, the ones who kind of stay in the game and keep building versus the ones who just burn out and get really frustrated, is it's that really subtle energetic difference between like, fuck, I'm still not there yet, versus like, yes, I'm still not there yet. Like, there's still stuff to work on, right? Like, it's the same kind of overview, but the energy behind it is like, you know, doom and gloom versus like just pure possibility. And of course, it's, you know, when we come from that place of like, yes, like there's still so much to learn. The world is my oyster in all facets, jiu-jitsu, life, money, you know, business, like all of it. That's when it becomes a really enjoyable journey. Like, it just, yeah, it becomes this process of problem solving and enjoying the process, enjoying the struggle of it, you know?
I agree 100%. I think, yeah. And again, and probably you have, in terms of the psychology in this and the conversations that people having, you probably have a decent amount of data in terms of like, people are like, hey, like, yeah, that's, I've made that realization now. And that's something that I want, you know, to me, a crazy person wants that, where, you know, jiu-jitsu people are crazy. We're crazy people, you know? So I always have someone show up and they're just like, again, we're this validation point of, oh, I want to learn self-defense. Listen, bud, you're not going to fucking do it in 2 hours. Like, you're not going to even do it in a week. I literally tell people, you're double the size of me. I'm the size of a 13-year-old girl. Try to beat me up. Oh, I can't. And I say, that's kind of dangerous. You know, like, you think you're going to learn how to beat me up in a week for me telling you how to do it? There's just no way. And I mean, I have people, which is amazing. I actually enjoy it. It keeps me up at night. I'll have black belts come to my academy, or I go teach a seminar and a black belt looks at me and says, with what you just showed and broken it down conceptually, I feel like I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And I say, that's fantastic. And I'm glad. I mean, like, that's a very scary thing to be able to observe, you know? And I love seeing that and then seeing what people do with that, you know?
Yeah.
The thing is, in the business, is I see it every single day. These people show up and it's man, girl, big, small, athletic, non-athletic, in shape, not in shape, wanting to do it two times a week, two times a day. And it's all the same. It's just like, hey, like, and I don't know why it's so common. I mean, I never experienced when I was, you know, coming up and I was growing in school, going into math class, then the teacher says, today we're learning, you know, multiplication. And someone raised their hand and saying, I have no idea what I'm doing. No one ever did that in school. You just sat there and you said, well, yeah, I mean, I have to learn it, right? You know, but there's that instant gratification of like, well, what did I just learn? Well, I learned this. And in jiu-jitsu, I don't know if you kind of get that, especially depending on what academy you're in or how they structure their information or how they're delivering their curriculum, whatever it may be. So I think, yeah, a lot of people just aren't accustomed to learning outside of here's a book, read this, tell me this, now you know it. I mean, like in jiu-jitsu, that's not the key. I can literally teach you a technique and you could drill it for 8 months. And the probability of you doing it on the mat is 100% based upon how bad the other person is, not how good they are, you know? And for most people, I do it all the time. They're like, oh, fuck, I've been working on this for so long. It's still not working. And I go, yeah, I mean, well, what you're working on is absolute shit. It's a technique. There's no way it's going to work unless it's someone that's making a mistake. It's going to take an ample amount of time. It's going to take 10,000 reps before you even start to understand the position to be able to apply it. And then it should be a concept to begin with. And, you know, I think that it helps a lot for people to see that, but it's absolutely mad the types of characteristics that jiu-jitsu people have, because there's no reward. It's just this constant state of, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And it's like, yeah, none of us do. And then we're all just hanging out together, you know?
What most high performers don't realize is the degree at which their performance is based upon not only their mindset, but more notably upon how their somatic body, their energetic body, their nervous system is wired to handle stress, pressure, or a lack of stress and pressure. And so because of this, I created High Performance Nervous System Regulation, the Masterclass. And this is a 90-minute masterclass training on everything you need to know for somatic regulation, mindset regulation, and basically rewiring your system to be in alignment with high performance and performing well under high pressure, high stakes circumstances. And so to gain access to this training, head to www.thelivefreeexperience.com/HPNS. The link is in the show notes, and I look forward to hearing your feedback on how you go with the training.
Yeah, I was laughing just earlier in the week about, you know, that kind of, it's almost like a wave experience. At least it's what I've experienced in jiu-jitsu, where you have those days on the mat where you're like, yeah, it's coming together, like it's starting to click, you know, and then you'll have like a couple of weeks off the back of that where you're like, man, I'm getting worse. Like my cardio's gone to shit. I'm like gassing out. My forearms are, you know, burning out. Like I've got no fucking idea what I'm doing. You know, and then the next day you'll come in and you have a really great day on the mats and it's like, yeah, I'm crushing this, you know? Yeah, it's a wild ride.
It really is. And I think like, again, I think when you get used to it, you're kind of even like, you know, in jiu-jitsu, they say like there's hills and valleys, you know, you're going to have the good days, the bad days, and everybody around you is having good days or bad days, but it's really hard for people to kind of take a step back and realize that it's happening to everybody, or it's happening to them. It's already happened to them. It's going to continue to happen. I still have hills and valleys as a black belt. I was still having hills and valleys as a competitor. There's no way that you're going to show up and say, well, I've been training for 10 years. I should be perfect now. The fuck you are. There's no way. There's always going to be somebody out there that's better than you. And if you're in an environment where you're the best, you definitely picked the wrong environment, right? So it's something that, again, I mean, I've never felt perfection. I've never felt, you know, like this constant state of like consistency of not experiencing failure, where it's just a constant state of wow, this is rainbows and butterflies all the time. I literally, even now, will cry at least on average once a week in training from having a mental breakdown. And I'm better than 99.9% of people in jiu-jitsu because of the goals that I'm making and how challenging they have to be in order for me to feel like I'm growing. For me, I don't know if it will go away. It hasn't gone away in 15 years, but I mean, it's definitely something that people start to understand, well, this is how it's going to be. And do I either want to continuously feel it or do I want to give up?
Thank you for admitting that, you know, once a week, at least you find yourself in tears. Cause I think that at least for me, like in my early days when I first started jiu-jitsu, and this is going back like a few years ago, I would really like fucking beat myself up for getting emotional on the mats. And it's only really been, you know, I took a lot of time off and did a lot of like, I suppose my own healing work outside of jiu-jitsu and then came back. And now it's something shifted where it's like, I honor the moments where I'm frustrated during training. I honor the moments where I'm, you know, the tears are flowing. And I think that there's power in normalizing the fact that it's an emotional sport. Like it brings up a lot. There's many times on the mats where my poor training partners, you know, I'm mid-roll crying and they're like, oh my God, like what's happened? Have I hurt you? And it's like, no, I'm good. Keep going. I'm just processing, you know? So thank you for admitting that, and especially as a male. I think that's like, that it's powerful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've never experienced, I think everybody kind of perhaps breaks down differently. I'm naturally a very passionate person. Even I think when I'm going to be old physically, mentally, you know, I'm still going to be that sharp 20-something-year-old male who is a world champion. And I just can't get past that aspect, you know? So if you pass my guard, I'm instantly like, wow, this is the end of the world, you know, like my life. And also, and I think what's healthy is to perhaps feel that, but then what's also healthy is to take that feeling, just like you're saying, process it. And then like, all right, cool. This is how we grow from it. So for me, it's a very healthy thing, you know, it's like, hey, I had a goal. I have an expectation. I'm very frustrated and I need to work harder. You know, I have very, very unrealistic goals. Some of the goals that I have are literally, even to me, if my student told me them, I would say, well, I think you're not very intelligent. I wouldn't make that goal, you know, and you should stay away from it. But if you want to enjoy constant heartbreak, please, by all means, go for it, you know? So, and it's, again, I think it's just, it's the part of like how people choose to grow, you know? And I think, again, because of my past life, I'm very consequence repercussion. And that's not negative or positive. It's just the definition of that, you know? Hey, I just spent literally 20 hours this week understanding guard retention and drilling it correctly. And the consequence and repercussion of that is you're not fucking passing my guard, you know? And I would love it if you literally put 20 hours into passing so I can literally know that you're not passing my guard. And then someone passes my guard, and rather than, you know, saying jiu-jitsu's dumb and I'm tired of this and I don't want to work hard anymore, I go, fucking 20 more hours, bud. Let's go back and do it again. You know? So for me, if I'm not crying, there's something wrong, right? Because if I haven't made a goal that truly is scary, worth crying. And for me, I'm not alive unless I'm making a goal that I need to grow. Because some people make goals that they can already do. And I personally do not do that shit. I think it's toxic. Keep away from me if that's my mentality. But for me, if the goal is out of my reach, I'm going to have to cry because I literally need to, you know, transform and grow and get bigger in order to reach that goal. And I've been doing it for so long that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm probably going to cry sometime the next 4 or 5 days, you know, and it's okay. You know, and everybody kind of around me knows that, or, you know, whether they respond to it or not, I don't know. I mean, people sometimes are like, man, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm perfectly fine. You know, like, let's go. I get frustrated all the time. I'm sitting there in tears. Someone just passed my guard and I become a physical, absolute terror to be around. And I'm just beating the shit out of somebody, you know, and it's very impacting. And my students see it, or they experience it firsthand, whatever it may be. And I'm kind of like, hey, like, you know, do you think that you're worthy of getting to a point to where you're not having to make goals anymore or grow, because I'm still doing it. You know, like, here's a fine example. Now, like, if you think that that's leadership, follow it. If you don't, do your own thing, but I'm not going to hide behind closed doors because it's something that's really important for my students.
Yeah. I think that's like the important piece, right? It's like, what are you making the emotion mean? Like falling into that feeling of frustration or sadness or anger or, you know, whatever emotion is relevant in the particular circumstance, it's like you could sit there and make it mean that, like, I'm not enough and, you know, this is, what's the point and I should just give up or whatever, you know, whatever other story you want to attach to it. Or as you've said, you know, you can make it mean that it's like, no, I'm fucking stretching myself. I'm stretching myself to reach something that is beyond my current capacity. And of course, with that comes like a plethora of different emotions, because you're literally pushing yourself beyond what you've previously known and beyond what you've previously been. So, you know, when you can anchor into that and have the emotions mean nothing other than you're perfectly on track, like, that changes the game.
100%. And I think, I think it's okay to have perhaps how we identify them, that they could be negative emotions, negative feelings. But for me, in terms of as a human being, as an individual, as a leader, I believe it's important for myself and for others, and you're saying it too, is that there needs to be a positive impact though, right? So it can't be X happened to me, I experienced X, so now I'm going to regress, or I'm going to not do something anymore, or, you know, this isn't for me, whatever it may be. It has to be a positive thing. It has to be an adjustment. And that's that data again, right? So day one white belt, I'm like, hey, you just experienced failure, right? Are you going to use that failure and be successful, or are you going to use that failure and you're just fucking done, right? Catalog that data, right? You not only know now more information on the section of what doesn't work, but that allows you to be closer and understanding what will work one day, right? And it's very important. So like for me, I yearn to cry because I know that I'm breaking down. In order to have a breakthrough, I must break first. There's literally an order, break then through, right? So I yearn for that breaking point because now I have the opportunity to go through it. So do I enjoy it? Am I crying? Am I smiling? No, I 100% do not like it. I hate it. In fact, I had to yearn for it so hard that because my comfort zone previously grew from the last time that I did it, I literally had to push myself even more. It's a constant thing. It's like showering. You got to do it every day. There's just no way. It just needs to be done. So that positive adjustment is crucial. And I think that for many people, how to do that or how to look at it, whatever it may be, is the key to retention. And if we have that ability, I mean, the sky's the limit.
Totally. Yes. So I have a question, and take this, whether you want to think of it as like past tense or present tense, but for you, like the transition from student or competitor to teacher, are they different mindsets for you, or is it they're kind of one and the same?
Do you mean in terms of from like my personal perspective, or you mean in terms of just like the title of each individual role?
Yeah, like from your perspective, do you find that, you know, when you're on the mats as a student, or, you know, back in your competitor days, were you in a different mindset to then when you stepped into, you know, being the teacher, being the coach?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even today, if I were to, after this, go like take a class and I was a student, my perspective as a student, not competitor, not instructor, student, I have a specific responsibility. And they're all very, very similar responsibilities, but in terms of the details, they're important. So I need to be prepared. So when I show up, that I'm hitting my goals. So like there's obviously learning goals, there's teaching goals, right? So that structuring is the same, but the plug-in detail is going to obviously change. I believe like being a student, there's a little bit of helping others. There's a little bit of helping myself, and I'm to be there in a student environment. There's other people that are like me that are there that day, all attempting to do the same thing. It's just different end goals. Mm-hmm. As a competitor, it's very selfish. There is no, I'm there to help someone else out. There's no wasting time. Like as a student, it would be fine to like, hey, like this person's struggling. It's their first week. I'm going to help them out. Awesome. Mm-hmm. It's great. You know, I tell my students that are higher belts to like, hey, make sure you help out the people that they're at the beginning of their journey with something, because you were once there and your leadership is very important. There's only one of me on the mat. So if you can help out a little bit, we'll all have a better time, right? Mm. As a competitor, I never did that. I still wouldn't do that. If you're not good, I'm not training with you. If you're unable to be molded when I'm drilling, I'm not drilling with you. If you're not having growth and you're not growing and your goals aren't clear, I'm not fucking training with you, right? So when I'm on the mat as a competitor, it's 100% me. When you stand on the podium, there's no one else there with you. Yeah. It's just you, right? So that work ethic is important. So I'm not relying on anybody else other than myself. No one's getting it done other than myself. So there's a huge shift there between student and then competitor, right? I'm not even there to learn as a competitor. I'm there to sharpen my sword and to make sure I just cut everybody's head off. As a student, I'm probably choosing different ways of learning and growing, whatever it may be. And as an instructor, for me, it's very important. Like, okay, well, now it's not even about myself at all. I'm in 100% in a state of giving, facilitating, and I'm helping other people. Yeah. And you know, I'm there to service. I'm here to serve, right? So I've got to now, as an instructor, realize that if I only deliver information from my point of view, then I'm probably not going to hit all the people in the room. So my job now is to say, okay, well, like, I've got to be able to deliver information in all the different realms of how people learn. So I'm making sure that everybody on this mat is getting better, because that's my fucking job. Mm. And then I just hold everybody accountable, you know? So I would say there's a shift in accountability, who's accountable for what and when and for how long, but they're definitely three entirely different humans. They're different, like, you know, wearing different hats, having different roles and jobs, but you can easily shift with clarity from one to the other, you know? And for some, that's by structuring specifically what you're showing up to do. And, hey, okay, I have to teach class today, or like, hey, I'm taking class today, or hey, it's comp class, or whatever it may be. But, you know, I think that clarity helps a lot.
Yeah. So then as a coach, how do you navigate, you know, because obviously there's people on the mats with all very different goals, very different, I guess, value systems in terms of why they're doing jiu-jitsu. You know, for some it's about self-defense, for others it's about maybe a healing journey, for others it's, you know, they want to be the best. You know, some are just hobbyists and just get a kick out of it, you know. How do you kind of, I guess, account for all of the different flavors on the mat?
Yeah, so kind of going back to earlier topics that we were talking about, as I was a student, as I was a competitor, as I had these different roles coming up, it was important for me to take a step back and assess the learning, assess how I was digesting, assess my point of view, because I could catalog it for later, for when someone else had something similar, I was then able to be more present and be able to help them out more efficiently, right? So
yeah.
When I'm on the mat teaching my class, good example. So last night, because now it's Thursday, right? Wednesday night, you know, there's 50 people in my jiu-jitsu class. You know, there's white belt to black belts, men, women, there's big, small, all different goals. There's competitors, there's whatever it may be. My role as an instructor is to just give the ability for people to be able to show up and then hit their goal. And now, obviously, with some people, I've got to help them create more clarity for that goal. Other people, some of my black belts, we literally just have efficient 5-second conversations. It would be like, we sat down for dinner, we're going to be here for 10 minutes. There's no wasting time saying, you know, like, are you enjoying the weather? It's like, this is where I'm at. This is what I'm experiencing. I need this data. Give it to me. And then I give it to him. Boom, go. See you later. Talk to you later. White belt, that's not going to happen, right? So when I'm structuring class and delivering information, I'll even chop it up and say like, hey, you know, my people that are currently with this goal and this idea, this is what you want to be thinking, you know, these people, this is where you want to be, you know, hey, make sure you grasp this data here, collect this over here. Right. So I'm trying to give all of those perspectives to everybody. So like, even though I'm on technically quote unquote, like umbrella, like creating an umbrella for the entire room, trying to hit everybody, that then gives me the ability to now walk around the room and be able to more efficiently have conversations with each individual person, because now they're prepared better to not waste time when we have those connections, right? Mm. So, hey, do we have a question? Ask it out loud in front of everybody, because me answering that question in front of everybody could then give you more value and time later as an individual. So like, my environment is very military based. I'm very like, hey, this is what you're going to do. It's how you're going to do it. And then once you get to this step in class, you then have freedom. And that's where you're going to be creative. That's where you're going to pick your individual goal. And then that's when you communicate it to me so I can help you. Do you understand? Yes. Cool. 1, 2, 3, break. So it's really important to me to have an academy, have a gym, have a place that all different goals can come to and that all can thrive. And that was my goal from day one. That's still my goal now. So I'm still focusing on that journey, and making to checking even more boxes for what we can offer as a service, for how we can deliver information so that more people can grow.
Beautiful. So where would you like to see the jiu-jitsu world go moving forward?
Personally, it would be great to, I think it's more internal. So I don't want jiu-jitsu to grow in terms of how big it is. I would love if jiu-jitsu were to take more than a second, reflect and truly understand its own value. I believe that we as individuals in the jiu-jitsu community as a whole undervalue what jiu-jitsu is, what it costs, the amount of work you need to put in, goals, expectations. I believe those things are still not efficient. They need to be corrected. Mm-hmm. I think that if we did that, we then have the ability to kind of, hey, well, now we can push this more, hit more people, be able to then have more people join our community, right? So I think I would love to see jiu-jitsu move in a pathway to where people took it more seriously. It would be great that, you know, and I get a little bit probably more choppy with this topic, but like, it's beautiful that there's so many people in jiu-jitsu. I think it's not beautiful that everybody is kind of similar in jiu-jitsu. I think that we really want to identify like, hey, there's multiple aspects of this. There's instructors, there's students, there's competitors. Everybody could teach. That doesn't mean you should. Everybody could compete. That doesn't mean that you can. Everybody can be a student. It doesn't mean that you should be. Like, we should have standard. We should have focal point and clarity. I think we should make jiu-jitsu more similar to going to a university, right? So we should really understand its value a lot better. And I think that if, as a whole, jiu-jitsu were to grow, the more work we do on that, the more people that we can involve. And then we have a better platform. You know, there's still people that are saying, well, I'll just teach jiu-jitsu for free. And I'm not going to give out great information while I do it, you know, because it's my goal to share jiu-jitsu with people. Well, yeah, that is great. That's a beautiful thing. But you're doing jiu-jitsu a disservice by being a hard instructor. So actually, if you could stop doing that, that would be great, because you may actually impact someone and not do it, you know? So I think that there's so much information out there that it's bad, you know, like social media has really created a huge opportunity for people to grow, for people to have the ability to create more revenue, for people to have the ability to pick up something new. But with that being said, there's now also an equal amount consequence and repercussion, balancing out opportunity for people to be negatively impacted by it, to not grow by it, right? To experience negative things about it, right? To hear about, you know, how bad something happens. So well, now I don't want to do it, right? So I think that we definitely want to take this opportunity, or it's not an opportunity, but if in terms of the question, to take that question and say, hey, like, can we do some self-work first? Like, can we love ourselves before we love other people? And then kind of from there, like, move one step forward.
Yes. Amazing. So what's next for you?
Oh, shit. I'm in a constant state of basically always working on what I'm working on. So I traveled very, very heavily, probably the past 18 months with seminars, where I was gone every single weekend teaching, you know, one to two seminars. I'm slowing down. I'm basically now only making myself available to my affiliation and whatnot. And I'm still teaching seminars outside of, but it's way more relaxed. I'm kind of increasing my value, taking a step back, you know, not saying yes to everybody, just saying like, hey, it doesn't work for me right now. I'm focusing on, you know, personally right now, increasing the quality of my own academy, creating more, you know, revenue streams, increasing the quality of the revenue streams that I have, putting a lot of time into my online learning platform, putting a lot of time into the academy growing, getting ready for the next step in like its stage of growth and whatnot. But for me, it's doing the same things, just making small adjustments. So still actively on the mat, still teaching, still making sure that I'm helping people, but just trying to do so better every single day, furthering my own education so I can get more information. Yeah, there's what's next is just kind of what's already been doing. So continue the jiu-jitsu journey and making sure that I'm enjoying it and getting ready for the next 10 years.
Beautiful. Copy and paste, right? With some tweaks along the way.
Copy, paste, you know, one or two adjustments, and then press enter and send it, you know, and making sure that I'm around people so that they can hold me accountable, making sure that I'm constantly with people that are challenging my point of views, and making sure that even if they agree, that they're saying like, hey, are you seeing this perspective? You know, so I actually think I'm really focused right now on thinking about myself and how I can do better. So then I can then help other people do better, you know, and doing a lot of self work and self love right now would probably be the best way of putting it.
Beautiful. I love that. I think that that's the most important work, really. Like, when it all comes down to it, that's the key.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely hard as a leader to sometimes lose yourself by finding other people, you know, and helping. Yeah. I have a fairly large student base, and, you know, I have to not only remind them, but remind myself there's only one of me. You know, I have to be patient with them. I have to ask them for the same patience in return. And, you know, you kind of get so busy helping other people that sometimes there's not enough time in a day to help yourself, you know, and important to make sure that you have to fill up your little water bucket to be able to water the plants, you know, and you got to keep that cycle going.
Definitely. Well said. So for anyone that wants to connect with you, follow along, where can they find you?
Social medias are easy. I've got my own personal Facebook. I will probably more than likely accept anybody's friend request. I've already at 5,000. So I just go through a state of clicking on people's whose birthday it is today. And if I don't know somebody, I delete them and then I accept the new person. You can find me on my Facebook fan page. Everything's Christian Woodmancy. You can find me on social media for Instagram. I use Instagram a lot. I'm not really on any other things from that. My academy is in Philadelphia. I'm traveling constantly at other academies. So if you want to see me at a seminar that's somewhere near you, just kind of follow the social medias to see when I'm close. I'm really big into communication. I reach out. I literally answer every single message that I get. So people can reach out to me via message on those social medias. If they want to contact me on my membership website, it's logicbjjonline.com. But yeah, so any of those social media platforms work, the website works, in-person works, whatever works for people. But I'm here.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to pick into your brain. I could honestly sit and talk to you forever. I love the way your brain works. Yeah, I feel really honored that you've made the time to jump on and have a chat. So thank you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. I really appreciate the freshness of this conversation. I really enjoyed the time that we chatted together. Hoping and looking forward to obviously chatting more in the future, whether it's, come and go conversation or doing something else, whatever it may be. But I really appreciate you, what you're doing, your decisions that you've made and how you're positively impacting others and obviously being able to be happy with yourself. But yeah, I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much for thinking about me. And it was an honor as well.
My pleasure. Well, if I'm ever in the US, I'll make sure that I come in and get in a role. And if you're ever in Australia, you make sure you hit me up.
You're always welcome. And yeah, I will definitely, I've always wanted to come to Australia and teach. It's just been a little bit more taxing to kind of put together a seminar tour, but that would be great.
We're kind of in the middle of nowhere, huh? Us Aussies.
It's not even that. It's just that I'm like, how long does it take to get there? And it's like, oh man, that's crazy, but I've always wanted to go, but I'll definitely put something together. And I know obviously Australia is absolutely huge as well. So I want to make sure I'm in the right areas and I don't want to be in the wrong places or on the wrong side of the country. But that would be absolutely awesome.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Christian. I appreciate you.
You appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Live Free Experience podcast. Now, I'm a real person back here, so every mention, every share, every bit of feedback is deeply valued, and I love nothing more than hearing what golden nuggets are landing for you. So if something did land for you, or there's someone in your world who needs to hear this, please share it with them and share it to your social media. Tag me in it so that I'm aware of it and I can share it to my story. As I said, every little bit counts. Every little bit helps get this message out there. And I want to close off today's conversation. Ladies, this one's for you. I have a free ebook and audio training called Fierce and Free. And this is for the woman who is looking to really step things up a level in her world, looking to overcome people-pleasing tendencies, build greater boundaries, and just be more discerning in where their energy is going. So you can get access to that one free at www.fiercefreewoman.com. And I will speak to y'all soon.